Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and of course my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil.
Hello there.
Hello.
How are you?
Yes.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Look at us both in space. We have nice, relaxing space backgrounds.
Yeah.
Beautiful stars.
You're wearing the Voyager Season 7 hat, I see.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
What's the t-shirt you have underneath your jacket? Is it anything?
That's a good question.
Can we see what it is?
This says, Dare Mighty Things.
Dare Mighty Things.
This shirt. I don't know where I got it, but I wear it a lot. Dare Mighty Things.
Okay. So seize the moment. Seize the day.
Seize
sort
the
of Carpe
day.
Diem kind of a shirt.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes.
Do you see what I'm wearing? I'm wearing our new merch here. You know, it's kind of funky. I've never had a sweatshirt, a hoodie with two sets of drawstrings, which is kind of nifty. It's a little gadgety, right? But this is our new lightweight hoodie.
Yeah.
Not a heavyweight, but a lightweight hoodie.
Great for around the house.
Great for around the house. Very fitted, you know. And the impetus behind this design was I kept thinking that it would be cool to have something that resembled sort of a Coca-Cola logo. And so this is what this is, basically.
Yeah,
sort
kind of a vintage-y vibe.
Yeah, vintage-y vibe. And that's the feel that I get off of this hoodie.
Very comfy.
Is in our store, everyone. Very comfy. DeltaFlyers.org. And you can pick up your Delta Flyers lightweight hoodie. How's the house? Everything coming in order?
Everything's good around the holidays here. Winter has come. I haven't gotten up on the ski slopes yet. Life is so busy, but can't wait to get out and do some skiing. Yeah, it's beautiful out. It's just beautiful here in Utah. It really is. Yeah.
So all's good. You have your skis and your boots, everything?
I've got everything. Yeah. Yeah. I got a couple pair of skis. I won't be skiing my powder skis. I've got some off-trail powder skis, some old Scotts that I love, Scott skis.
Scott skis?
Yeah.
Isn't Scott the don't they make the...
They make goggles.
They make the
bicycles.
Goggles.
They make skis.
They have skis too?
Yeah.
Okay. So who makes your other pair of skis then? The other, you said you have powder, all-terrain, and then you have something
else? I have Atomics.
Atomic,
my other skis. Yeah, that's my kind of all-mountain skis and Atomic.
Those are good.
Yeah, they're really
good. We've skied together once. You know that, right? Only one time.
I think it was when my little short film was up at Slam Dance Film Festival in Park City, Utah.
You were hauling butt down that mountain. I was like, man, he's hauling. He's not even checking. You know, usually when you're going down, and you'll check a couple times to slow yourself down. You weren't even, you were like, screw it. You were like a bullet.
That's how I tore my ACL.
I figured.
Because I was flying down mountains.
Yeah, I had to use all my wherewithal to keep up with you. I was like, dang, he is moving.
But you were on a snowboard and I'm on skis. So
was I on a board?
Yeah, you were on a board. Yep.
No.
Yeah, you were. You were totally boarding. Yes.
Really?
Because I remember after that, I was like, I should try snowboarding because you were really into it. And maybe it was just a phase you were going through.
What I recall.
Do you still
was,
board?
No, I don't. What I recall was I boarded one day and then the next day with you, I rented skis. And so I was so used to boarding from the prior day that I wasn't as fast on the skis. Like I was more tentative. That was my memory, but maybe I'm wrong.
You were definitely on a snowboard.
On a board.
I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. I prefer skis because I started on skis, right?
Board
for me is like, okay, it's fun, but I'd rather be on skis, to be honest.
Yeah, so, agreed.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. We'll have to revisit the ski slopes.
Our ski time.
Yeah. Harry and Tom skiing.
Yes.
The holodeck program that never was. The unfilmed holodeck segment, right?
We could that would have been a good holodeck.
That would have been cool.
For us to have created, for sure.
Could you see that? Mary Howard's like, yeah, we're going to Utah. We're going to film a segment of Harry and Tom skiing.
I would love it. I would love it.
All right. This week's episode, let's get ready to watch this. It's vis-a-vis. It's a a French name, vis-a-vis.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go watch this episode and come back with our recap and discussion.
Patreon patrons, stick around for your bonus material.
Yes. Hey, everybody. We are back.
Hey, yes, we are.
Woo.
We are face to face, or as we say in France, vis-a-vis.
Vis-a-vis is how we say it. Vis-a-vis. How's this little reacquainting yourself with the big Tom Paris episode? How was that?
I cannot believe, honestly, I did not remember any of this.
What?
Certainly from the title. No, as I was rewatching it, I remembered scenes, but not a ton. I mean, it's crazy because I don't think there's any other episode where Tom Paris has been in literally scene after scene after scene after scene.
Yeah, like, this was your tour de force for sure.
Which which you weird that I don't remember.
Well, it's weird and it's not weird. Let's just be honest. Is it right?
I don't know.
It's odd. I'm going to say it's odd. It's odd that you didn't remember that.
Yeah, it's because there is a lot to do in it. But I will say, I still stick to my rule of what makes a good Voyager episode. And this does not qualify because it didn't involve a lot of our cast. It was very isolated.
Your rule was, does it involve all of the cast? And it does involve all of the cast.
Yeah, but they don't do a lot. The end, Janeway had like three lines or something, like hardly anything.
Okay, so 1 to 10, what are you going to give this one then?
I'm going to give this one a 6.5. What are you going to give it?
I'll give it the same thing. I'll give 6.5. It a 6.5.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it didn't involve the whole cast enough. And it's not that I hated my performance. There was definitely some choices I would do differently. And it's not that the concept is bad. It just didn't involve the highs and the lows, the comedy, the lighthearted moments. It was just sort of played in a middle zone a lot.
All right. No. A little safe is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's get cracking on this. Let's start with our poetry synopsis. My haiku for vis-a-vis. Tom works on his car. Steth steals Tom's identity. Real Steth saves the day.
Nice. Very nice. That is a perfectly encapsulated haiku.
I'm going to be self-critical. It was a safe haiku. I wasn't. Yeah. It was middle of the road, which kind of fits this episode.
Kind of fits
a middle
this of the episode. Road episode. Totally does.
Yeah, it's not okay. I didn't knock it out of the park. Okay, let's hear you.
I'm feeling pretty good about my limerick.
Yeah, you said that earlier. So let's hear it.
Okay, here we go.
I want to hear it.
Limerick for vis-a-vis. On the view screen, a shuttle, a coaxial drive Paris sees. Steth comes aboard. Swaps his body with ease. B'Elanna's perplexed. Janeway is body swapped next. And the whole thing is called vis-a-vis.
Oh, wow. You've been through it. Ooh, look at you. Wow. Yeah. I'm going to promote you to black belt now. You are now master of limerick.
I'm going to say it one more time because it was so good.
Yeah.
Here's the limerick that I'm super proud of. On the view screen, a shuttle, a coaxial drive Paris sees. Steth comes on board, swaps his body with ease. B'Elanna's perplexed. Janeway is body swapped next. And the whole thing is called vis-a-vis.
Ooh. Boom. Yeah, man.
I feel like that is my best limerick.
That's a very witty and creative limerick by Rebecca. It really is. I am really impressed. Okay. Good job. I know you're never going to disclose what percentage of participation that Rebecca
not going to specify. Never going to specify.
Okay. Still, it doesn't matter if it comes from you or it comes from you and her, it's still a good limerick. So
thank you.
Good
sir.
Job.
Thank
good
you.
Job. Hey, let's talk about the guest stars in this episode real quick.
Let's start with Dan Butler.
Yeah.
Dan the Bulldog Butler. So
from
Dan,
Frasier, right?
Frasier.
Yes. Is it Frasier or did I get that wrong?
It's Frasier.
It is Frasier. Yeah.
I think that maybe Frasier was his television debut because I look back at his credits and he's got a ton of credits.
Yeah.
But the very first, the oldest credit he has is Frasier, which means, by the way, that he did Voyager on the heels, like simultaneously. I think he was still doing Frasier
at the same time
or just kind of winding it down. So
okay,
Voyager was one of the first things he ever did as well. Frasier was certainly the first.
Yeah.
But Voyager was one of the first things. So Dan Butler comes from the theater, did a lot of theater, made his name in the theater, as we said, you know, made his debut on Frasier. And that is the TV show that he did, I think, 56 episodes or something of that show.
Okay, right.
But he's done a ton of stuff. The other guest star is Mary Elizabeth McGlynn, who played Daylin.
Elizabeth McGlynn. Okay.
McGlynn. Mm-hmm. And
She has a name? She has a name on this too?
Yes. Daylin is the name, I guess, that came up in the credits.
Yeah.
But she has more credits than I've ever seen any actor that we've ever had on Voyager.
Really?
But they're all video game credits. She's most known as a voice actress. Hundreds of video games, cartoons, things like that. So I'm sure, like in the fandom world, she's probably been to Comic-Cons and signed video games and all kinds of things. She's definitely in the genre world.
Yeah. I've probably played games that she's voiced, so
probably
characters on. So interesting. Yeah. I didn't know that. Okay. Yeah. All right. Written by Robert J. Doherty. Does that ring a bell? This name, the writer?
Rob Doherty was a writer's assistant.
I see. Okay.
He was a writer's assistant. This may have been his first script. Yeah. He wrote a really interesting story and tricky one to execute. I thought he did a great job.
Yeah. It can get a little bit confusing when you do body swap type of episodes. Mm-hmm. Directed by one of our favorite directors, Jesus Salvador Trevino.
You're right. Was one of our favorite. Our entire cast loved Jesus. He was very gentle and calming, and I thought he did a really great job in this episode, real subtle ways, the way the scenes were blocked, the way he sort of revealed little details. I thought he did a great job. So.
Yeah. So we open up this entire episode in the garage where you are working on a 1969 Chevy Camaro. And I actually wrote Paris the Grease Monkey without knowing that that was the name of the line. Yes, I had no clue that that was the name of your program, you know, Paris Alpha One Grease Monkey program. And the doctors, he's upset. He's upset about Paris not reporting to sickbay for his duty shifts there and for further training as a nurse, as the assistant to the doctor. He's not happy, really, with you.
He's very frustrated. And, you know, Tom is sort of playing it off like, you know, there's nothing exciting happening there.
Yeah.
You can tell that he's feeling a little antsy in this scene, that Tom Paris is going through a bit of a midlife crisis of sorts. He's sort of bored with his assignments and trying to have fun. And, you know, this holodeck seems to be very meaningful, which we realize later on. You know, he acknowledges that he's sort of been escaping his responsibilities or his life a little bit. But
let's call it a mid-series crisis, because we are in the middle of the series right now. Exactly. Yeah. Practically right on the nose. So that's funny, too.
That is funny. Yeah, it's a mid-series crisis for sure. Okay. I made notes that the grease is perfectly placed on my cheekbone on one side. And
it is.
Other thing I remembered as I watched the scene was wearing those coveralls.
Yeah.
Was such amazing change of pace from the wool tight suits that we wore all the time.
I bet you were comfortable. Oh. It was roomy. You could have stored food inside of there. No one would have known.
As I watched this episode, I actually remembered that I got cold on set, which I never got cold because we had those wool uniforms,
and
all the tight, you know, underneath parts and everything. It was, I was always hot and uncomfortable and sweaty.
I have a question for you. That garage set was built on stage 16, or was it an actual garage of a house that you guys went on location to shoot?
No, it looks good, right? It looks
wonderful.
It was built on stage 9.
Actually. A 9?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Which is the same set as Sick Bay and Astrometrics and Engineering was on 9. And there was enough area for us to build
for small sets.
And that's where your car was driven in on. And they built the whole garage there.
Two more things about this opening scene I remember. One is there was a lot of movement. I remember when we were rehearsing and blocking it that I was getting up, I was going around to one side, I was coming around to another, I was sitting in the car. And I remember saying, are you sure you want me moving this much? Like, this is going to be a lot of shots. Like, we're going to be here a long time. But Jesus was like, no, I like this movement. And I remember, you know, Marvin always encouraged lots of movement. Mm-hmm. And Jesus goes, no, this is the opening scene. I want this to have energy and movement. I don't want to just sit you down and, you know, sit still because it's our opening scene. It needs to move around.
Yeah.
That came back to me. The other thing that came back was the music playing. Did you hear the,
Yes.
The music playing?
I did.
That is a very famous guy named Dick Dale.
Okay.
Dick Dale did surf music for all the surf movies back in the day.
Yeah.
Dick Dale is a very famous surf guitarist. And I had always thought that Dan Curry knew Dick Dale, and that's how we got Dick Dale's music in the show.
Oh.
And for some reason, in fact, on the rewatch, I was like, oh yeah, that's Dan Curry's friend.
Yeah, Dick Dale.
And then after we did the rewatch, and I always go and do a little research for our conversation about it.
Sure.
And I looked up and it says online, the reason that we got the Dick Dale music was not Dan Curry, it was Ron Moore.
Oh.
Ron, not the writer, Ronald B. Moore, our VisFX supervisor.
Yeah,
was kind of, Ronald Moore was a big fan and suggested it. And then it turned out that Dennis McCarthy, one of our composers on the show, had actually played in Dick Dale's backup band.
Oh my gosh.
Before he became a composer. So that's how we got
look at this
the Dick Dale music. And
wow.
I always thought it was Dan Curry.
And
what
now,
I'm remembering now is Dan Curry was a huge fan.
Yes.
And Dan Curry got Dick Dale to sign a guitar. And Dan was so excited because he had Dick Dale's signature on his, you know, Dan Curry plays the guitar.
Yeah.
So that was my memory was Dan Curry being a fan of Dick Dale, but not that he was the guy.
Anyway. Did you notice the guitar case and the guitar in the scene too?
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, it was actually stored at the top. I don't know, sort of like a shelf that's above
up
the garage
in the,
door.
Yeah, the rafters or something.
Yeah, it was up in the rafters. So it was something that you have to really look to see, but it was there.
It's a great set. Wow. Great setting, great holodeck.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like they could have kept that holodeck going and had people come down and help Paris on the car or
that would have been
just
fun.
Hang out in the garage. That would have been
fun.
Very simple,
great
little holodeck to keep going.
So now we jump to the bridge and Harry has picked up some type of spatial distortion. It seems like space is folding in on itself and a vessel appears. And Paris all of a sudden perks up and he's like, whoa, that ship is powered by a coaxial warp drive.
Yeah, how does he know that? Paris never comments. I mean, it's always Harry or Tuvok.
Exactly.
Or even Chakotay that have information. Paris never knows anything.
Exactly. And evidently, you know, and Chakotay has never heard of this. He's like, what? And Paris then explains, well, it folds space to allow a ship to travel huge distances instantaneously. So then I wrote down, Paris does science. And typically Paris is not Mr. Science guy, but here we are. Paris is all over the place with the science.
Technobabble. They never gave me technobabble, by the way. They never gave it to me because early on they tried and I flubbed it up so bad.
No.
They stopped giving it to me.
They
but
did.
You could handle it and they gave it to you all
they
the
gave
time.
It to me all the time. But in this scene, they decided that Paris was going to be Doogie Howser and he would be the genius of how to save this guy. The core is breaching. I say, can we beam him out? And then Paris is like, no, we can't do that. And I think we should do a symmetric warp field. So again, this technobabble, you are literally pulling it out of your bum. It's sort of like, where
totally,
are you? What the?
Huh? Well, even Janeway says at one point, how did you know about this? And he goes, advanced subspace geometry class. It was the only course that I paid attention to in school.
Like, really? That's
advanced
the course that you get?
Geometry? Really?
Sorry. That's the course that Harry's, you know, was the one that loved. But Tom, I was shocked. So it was it was kind of nice to see a new science loving Paris, which is so rare. Well, you save the day. I mean, you really use that symmetric warp field to help out that pilot, a fellow pilot of yours, right?
Well, it's funny because Paris thinks of this solution, does it, and then goes, got him.
Yeah.
And I pause for a minute. I'm like, got him. How do I know it's a him?
Like,
why am I assuming?
Right.
We don't know. We just had one life sign.
We jump to the transporter room and Steth has beamed in and he explains to Janeway that he is a test pilot and he comes from the fourth planet in the Benthan system, which is approximately 20 light years away, which is not close at all. And clearly he got there because of this drive, this warp drive that he has that is able to, you know, jump these huge distances, this coaxial warp drive of his.
And for, you know, for all intents and purposes, I do think that Dan Butler really separated his persona that he has on Frasier from this character. He gave it a different voice. He gave it a different inflection, right? But one thing about it that he didn't change was when he walked off of that transporter pad, I go, oh, that's his character from Frasier. Just his mannerisms of how he walked was kind of similar to his character in Frasier.
Speaking of his walk, so we first meet him in the transporter room, you're right, and Janeway and I think Tuvok were there.
That's right.
To greet him, right?
Yes.
And as they start walking down the hall, did you notice that he was leading the way as if he knew
He knew where he was going.
I was like, wait a minute. I rewound it. I'm like, why is he walking ahead of the captain? He's never been here before.
No, he clearly hasn't been there before.
Yes. They're heading to try to, you know, figure out how they can help him with his coaxial drives. If he gets the coaxial drive fixed, he can get home.
Yeah.
It's a long way to home, though.
Yeah.
And then we jump to Chakotay's quarters.
Yes.
And Paris walks in and asks Chakotay, you know, I'd love a favor. I'd really love to help Steth with his ship, fix his ship. And Chakotay's like, I don't know. You've been messing up lately. And you're not showing up
to sick bay.
Not showing up for sick bay. The doctors, you know, made note of that. And you've really made some great changes, positive changes in the last 4 years. You don't want to mess that up.
Yeah.
And then he thinks about it, he pauses, he says, okay, permission to go to sick bay.
Right.
Chakotay thinks about it and he goes, nope. You're going to head over to Steth and help him with the ship.
Yeah.
That's an order.
Which makes you happy inside. I can see you're beaming inside. My other note in this scene is Paris's fluffy hair returns.
I have the same note.
What is happening?
I don't know.
Who's doing your hair in this episode?
This is fluffy hair.
So fluffy. I mean, goodness gracious. And it's going in every direction too.
It's a big wavy mess.
Your hair has a mind of its own. I've never seen it this fluffy, and it was fluffy to the max there.
Very fluffy.
Yes. Yep.
And then we cut to Steth's ship next.
Mm-hmm.
And they're starting to look at some of the parts, and they're both kind of doing some work independently. And Paris is telling Steth about, you know, classic Earth. And while he's telling the story, we cut over to Steth and we see for the first time that Steth sort of morphs into this female alien, a different alien.
Yeah.
Looks female, appears female, and then kind of morphs back just in time for Paris to turn around. So Paris doesn't see it.
Yeah. And this is our first indication of something is afoot. Something is afoot. Is not right with this one, right? But this is the bonding scene. This is the Paris-Steth bonding scene. Like, hey, you're a test pilot. I'm a test pilot.
Yeah.
We can be buds. And Steth even says, hey, why don't you go with me to test out this Mithrin battleship or whatever? It'll be a lot of fun. Just come and join me for a while, right?
Because we've saw Paris in the garage. We know he's a little bored with life these days. Yeah. And this just feels like exactly the kind of adventure he always wanted to go on. But he says, no, I've got responsibilities now. And B'Elanna would be furious with me. And then he goes, oh, B'Elanna.
B'Elanna.
And
must
clearly,
leave.
Yeah, must leave quickly. Bye.
See screwed you.
Up. Yeah, he in forgot trouble. They had a date.
Yeah.
I forgot they had a date.
So, I love how you try to play it off in the mess hall. Like, you're like, hey, I guess you started without me. You're trying to be all casual.
She's like, and then she goes, I finished without you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you start nibbling off of her, like, you know,
picking at her food.
Yeah, picking at the food that she hasn't eaten.
Leftovers.
Just sitting the leftovers.
That's what couples do.
Is that what they do?
Couples do that. Yeah.
What if that food had fallen on the floor and she just picked it up and put it back in the tray?
True.
Now you're eating like food covered with lint and you don't even care. Yeah.
I thought it was, I did like the fact that I was nibbling and eating a little. It felt very natural.
It was natural.
Yeah.
It was
grounded the scene in a nice way.
It was. So. Yeah. Tom is very annoyed in this scene.
He's
You were so quick to just be snappy.
To get defensive.
I wrote down what is happening with Tom's attitude right now. It's just.
Well, that's the whole scene, right?
Yeah,
she's going, what is wrong with you? Mm-hmm. What is going on with you lately? Mm-hmm. You're canceling dates. You're spending all this time on the holodeck.
Yeah.
And yeah, I wrote down Paris is being a jerk. He's acting like a jerk.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I will comment and say, I know in the context of the story, that was something that was needed, that he did need to sort of seem a little distant and disconnected and irritated a little bit. But I feel like they wrote that and then I added that sort of attitude and it was like bananas on bananas. It was like too much.
Yeah.
Too much. I wish I had lightened that up quite a bit.
Or do you think you could have allowed the journey to that point of ultimate annoyance to have taken a little bit longer where you built, you know what I'm saying? Because for me, it kind of felt like you were okay for a second and then a switch just flipped over and you became Jerk Tom. And it was like, oh my God, there was no, you know, maybe if it was a little more time to build a little bit before you lost it.
I wish I had thrown it away a lot more and just not leaned into the dialogue. The dialogue was jerky enough.
Even if you just said it and thrown it away, it would have been
much less more effective.
Less overkill. Instead of using a hammer, you'd use a sledgehammer on Torres, right? You could have.
That's what people say about my acting, Garrett, is that I... It was like a sledgehammer sometimes. Yeah, and I don't disagree. I think, you know,
there were times when you came on the bridge and I would announce the sledgehammer is here. I would say that and everyone applauded because you were known as the sledgehammer.
That was my nickname.
That was your moniker. Yeah.
I wonder if, you know, I definitely see it in my performance and I have been away from acting for a long, long time and mostly coaching actors and, you know, directing actors.
Correct.
So having the distance myself to look back at what I did, I wonder, because I had come from the theater and did a lot of theater and big theaters with, you know, where you got to be big.
Yes.
The acting has to be really big.
Yes.
And I see some of that in my performance on Voyager, particularly this episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
That it sometimes is just big choices. Like I'm playing it as if it's a, you know, 2000 seat theater as opposed to a camera 5 inches away from me.
Yeah.
And I don't mean this as a criticism, but Kate Mulgrew came from the theater and did a ton of theater. And I feel like sometimes Kate's performance also could be big choices. You know what I mean? Like, no room for doubt. Like, you know what her intention in playing the moment is. And I wonder if sometimes that comes from actors who build a foundation in a theater where your choices have to be bigger in order to read.
Yeah.
But I did like my line when B'Elanna said something like, you know, what's going on? You've been on the holodeck all the time lately. What holodeck program are you doing? And Paris's answer is, oh, the dancing girls of Namibia Prime, of course.
That was a good line.
She's like, I'm out of here.
Her reaction was perfect. It was exactly how she would react. She did it
absolutely
perfectly. All right. So we jump from this scene to Steth's ship, where we see Steth reverting back to the female form.
Going in and out of his female form. And he gets some kind of medical device and he checks with a computer on his DNA stability.
Yeah.
And the computer says, does a DNA stability analysis and says, basically, your DNA is going to revert back to its original form in 3 hours and 13 minutes.
Right. He won't be able to stop it at that point, right?
Yeah, he won't be able to stop it. And he's got to figure out his next move in the next 3 hours and 13 minutes.
Yeah, that's right. Now we're in the corridor and Paris is walking with Steth and he comes up with this, what we need is a carburetor. We need a carburetor. And Paris goes up to, I guess, I'm guessing it's Holodeck 1. Paris says, program Alpha 1, Grease Monkey. And they go inside and Paris explains the whole, you know, what a carburetor does with a 20th century vehicle. And this is news to Steth. And Steth is excited. Steth's like, whoa, you figured it out.
They have a little technobabble like exchange. It felt like a warp particles moment.
It was. Because
Paris was kind of technobabbling. And then Steth was like technobabbling back. Yeah. And they're like, really? Yeah. And technobabble this? And technobabble that?
Yeah.
It felt like we were both going to go, warp particles.
Exactly.
Close. Mm-hmm. Came close.
Yeah. The end of the scene is important because Paris is searching around looking for something. It's a wrench and it's gone. Is that what it is? A wrench? I think it was. Yeah. And that's important for this scene, for this episode, actually. There's a tool missing. We then jump to the cargo bay and Steth has accessed the ship's computer. He's downloading Paris's file, the entire file of Tom Paris, everything to do with Tom Paris, exactly, yeah. Including Janeway's logs as well, right? It's all in there.
Growing businesses and finance professionals, you need Bill Spend and Expense, the free-to-use spend management software. It's powered by the Bill Divvy Corporate Card, which helps growing companies scale with credit lines of $500 to $15 million, automated expense reports, and as many virtual cards as you need. For a limited time, get $500 when you get started with Bill Spend and Expense. Request a demo at bill.com/get500. Terms and conditions apply. Advertised credit ranges are not guaranteed and are determined at approval. Card issued by Cross River Bank, member FDIC.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yep. And Seven arrives and calls him out on it. But, you know, with a little slick.
He's very smooth.
He's so smooth. He's smooth operator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, Tom wanted me to come in here and get this other information.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, well, no, you couldn't do that without him because, you know, he needs access codes.
And yeah. Clearly, he's done this before.
Yes. He sneaks his way out of it by lying and cheating. Yeah,
he's a bit of a slick Rick. Yeah. Okay. So we jump to the exterior shot of the ship. You see Voyager into that ship and there's a captain's log and Janeway says the repairs to the coaxial drive have been repaired, have been completed, and that's ready to go.
And that space shot was very cool, by the way.
I did like
it. It was kind of underneath the ship and you see our warp drive sort of, you know, the energy moving around and his ship kind of tethered underneath. Mm-hmm. It was an angle that we don't normally see. I just thought it was really cool.
I agree. It looked good. We're in that ship, and this is when he gets uncomfortably close to you.
I wrote Steph comes really close. And then I wrote backing up. Why is Paris backing up?
Yeah.
And I think the intention there is obviously that like Paris all of a sudden is realizing, oh, you're trouble.
Yeah.
And but there was something in the way this close standing, and we've talked about this before, they would often block us in ways that were just like, no, you need to get closer because, you know, that was a weird one to me. And then the sort of backing up, there was sort of a weird, like, I don't know if it was a flirty nature. It was like,
there was some sexual tension there. For sure.
It was something weird. Yeah.
Does Steth show you the wrench there? Isn't this where Steth says, I've gotten your DNA?
This is the moment where Paris is kind of realizing, this is not my buddy.
Yeah.
This guy is evil and creepy and really weird.
See, this is what happens when you leave your real buddy, Harry Kim, to hang out with.
I know.
Alien.
I know.
BFF, right?
I've learned my lesson.
Yeah. Yeah.
Harry gives you... I've learned my lesson, Harry.
You learned. Okay. He then chokes you and then transfers whatever process this being uses. Yeah. It happens then. And the transfer happens. You morph into Steth and Steth morphs into you. Mm-hmm. And then he fires this phaser, this green beam comes out. And I don't know if he's stunning you, right? That's
he's
what it
stunned
is.
You don't know at this
you don't
point,
know. He
later
looks like
we
he's
realize
kill you.
That Paris does wake up on the ship. So you realize he's just stunned him for, you know, a while. So
that's
he'll be out of it. I had forgotten this episode, as I said before, and things were coming back to me on this body swap moment. All of a sudden I was like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
I remember I really enjoyed this part where I got to play an alien in Paris's body. It was a great freedom to be like, oh, it's a whole different guy.
Yeah. So, yeah. You got to stretch your acting chops a little bit.
There. Yeah.
You got to, yeah.
This is where it kind of turned fun for me as an actor.
Yeah, of course.
Getting to do that swap.
I could see that. I was jealous. I was watching this. Oh, man, he had fun with this one. He had so much fun. So we jumped to the bridge and Imposter Paris. Well, actually, let's correct that. Since this episode is titled Vis-a-vis, which is French, I'm going to use the French word for fake, which is faux. I'm going to say Paris. Faux Paris. No, I'm going to pronounce it the French way. Ooh. Faux Paris. Faux Paris takes his place at Cannes. And Steth's ship takes off. So we see.
And by the way, Faux Paris takes his place at Cannes.
Yeah.
But first he walks in and says, sorry, I'm late.
Right.
And then Faux Paris walks the wrong way.
Yeah, he does.
Did you see that? And I remembered this moment of thinking, this would be a good choice as an actor to not go the way that Tom Paris always goes.
Good choice.
He doesn't know.
Right.
So he's like,
yeah.
He walks over and he's looking around. Faux Paris is kind of assessing the bridge because he doesn't know this bridge and doesn't know where Paris normally goes. And
No. You know what I just thought? In your limerick, you could have rhymed faux Paris with potpourri is what you could have done you wanted to. There's a lot of rhymes here. But but good choice by you to take the wrong way down to the con. And nobody notices this. Nobody realizes that you've walked the weird way.
I know.
Right?
It's just like, why didn't the gaffer go, where are you
where
going?
Are you going?
Well, she does say, what is it, Tom? And Tom goes, it's nothing or something. I made a note that I like the face that I made there when I answered her. It was clearly not Tom Paris.
It was a good face. So did Steph...
I made a lot of faces, by the way, in this episode. I did make a lot of faces. I was mugging it up.
You were facial mugging left and right, but it's fine. So did Steph program an autopilot sequence for that ship to take off? Is that what happened?
Yeah, I think he must have, yeah.
If you're unconscious...
Put Tom's body in there and hit go back home now that the coaxial drive is fixed.
Right.
Get out of here.
Right. Okay.
And he probably figured that like what looked like was going to happen, that the ship would go back, that they'd arrest that guy and he'd be home free.
Yeah. We jump to mess hall and Chakotay is now talking to Paris. They're sitting down and he tells Paris that, you really need to report to sick bay. And again, your choices as faux Paris are great because it just a little bit off and everything you did. Yeah, I really admired your work in this episode of just that little difference there to change.
There were some fun moments.
Really, really good. Yeah.
Yeah. Faux Paris was a lot of fun to play.
Mm-hmm.
Chakotay tells Paris to go to sick bay and Paris clearly is not, if Faux Paris is not remembering any of this, but he's trying to play it off like he does.
He is. Yeah. He's trying his best. Great scene in the corridor. You're walking around, you see Seven, you're like, nope, don't want to mess with that one. That one calls
lots
me out
of mugging there. I noticed a lot of mugging in that moment.
Yeah.
And then he goes to the map on the wall. And I was like, this is like what you see when you go to the shopping mall.
Yeah, the mall.
Like there's the mall map.
Yeah.
And by the way, a detail for our audience to know is that map that was in the hallway of the ship or that console that showed the entire ship, that was not a TV screen or a video screen. It was just backlit, printed graphic sheets of plastic. So because it's, plastic printed graphic sheets that are backlit, They had a shot of Tom Faux Paris pushing some buttons as if he's trying to pull up the enlargement of the medical sick bay.
Right.
And then it cut to an angle where you couldn't see the monitor for a moment. And then it came around when Harry came in and there was the
replaced one. Yeah.
But it's a replaced graphic. Yeah. It was
that
not
had
a,
to be physically replaced. Basically.
Physically like pull off the other part, put on the new part.
Stick on that one. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I remember as I watched this, I was like, I think I remember having to break the scene up. And so when Harry comes over was a whole separate time. I think we may have even scheduled it in a way that you weren't there for the first part of stuff. And then they got to switch the graphic and that's how they got you in. So.
Oh yeah. I was watching that scene and I was thinking, why did I not play that? Where I was more perplexed with you not knowing where sickbay was. You know what I'm saying? It was kind of like, I'm like, oh, well, you don't know where sickbay is? Well, that's weird. I just, I threw it away too much. I almost felt I should have.
I don't think so.
You're like, okay.
Why
with
would
it?
You suspect? Like,
yeah,
you're assuming. Of course, you know where sickbay is.
Yeah.
That can't be real.
Yeah.
What you're doing.
Okay.
No, I totally bought that. I love that little walk and talk. And by the way, we walked and talked a lot.
We did.
And I know that that hallway is not that long. And so whatever Jesus and Marvin Rush figured out to do in terms of from 7 of 9 to the mall map to you and I walking and turning corners, I got disoriented. I was like, where the heck are we? And I know that, you know, it's basically one hallway there that curves around with a couple short little pieces off to the side.
Yeah.
And I got disoriented. I was like, how did they do that? I couldn't figure it out.
Did you also notice while we're walking, we're right in the middle of the hallway and every background actor has to turn their body sideways to get past us because it's such a small confined space.
And the dolly is pulling backwards. So they're having to dodge the dolly and we try to make it look smooth, but it's not always that smooth.
Right.
So then we go to sick bay. Faux Perry shows up and the doctor is giving him a very complicated assignment for the day. Lots and lots of very...
You got to calibrate the biobeds or something like that.
Calibrating the biobeds and doing all kinds of things. And and Faux Perry keeps going, okay.
All right.
Then the doctor starts to go to his office and Paris can't even start the tricorder.
No.
The
every time you hit a button, it goes...
And the doctor turns around and then he hits it again. And the doctor turns around, keeps beeping. And so, so the doctor comes over, is very suspicious, and Faux Perry, again, the con man that he is, is able to, first he claims illness. He's like, you know what? I'm just not feeling well. I got to go. And the doctor grabs him and brings him back. And well, lucky for you, we can do the scans right here.
Yeah.
And then he comes up with another excuse. He goes, you know what? The truth is I can never live up to you.
Yes.
And the doctor, he appeals to the doctor's ego, which of course works.
It worked perfectly.
The doctor is touched.
Yeah.
And he tells Faux Perry, he says, Mr. Paris, you should go reflect on your own strengths and realize your worth. And he puts his hand on Paris. And then Faux Perry puts his hand up on the doctor's and has this moment where it's just a touching moment.
Thank you, doctor.
Such a funny scene.
It is. And you did miss the line that the doctor said when he says,
what did he say?
He has misplaced aggression, the shirking of responsibilities, all classic signs of an inferiority complex. So, this was a great.
That's what sets him up.
It's a wonderful, wonderful little set of lines there. I loved it.
Yeah, good lines. Good scene. Very funny scene.
Yeah. And you touch the doctor's hand.
I know. It looks like Bellana's quarters next.
That's right.
And Faux Perry is in there putting.
He's putting because remember, Harry said, remember, you missed those 2-foot putts. So he's practicing his putting.
Mm-hmm. And I do remember doing that scene and I could not putt. And in fact, the shot that's in there is a missed putt.
Oh, it actually looked okay. I thought it got close.
Yeah. I remember they were trying with that camera down on the ground. Like you said, 1 to 3 takes.
Right.
Just don't have time. And so I couldn't get it in a couple of takes, they were like, moving on. Yeah. We'll go on with the missed putt. So.
Yeah. But when Milana walks in, your physicality of how you stood there as Faux Perry was perfect because you stood so awkwardly and just you leaned over and you were doing a Captain Morgan, position or whatever with the hand on the hip. I was like, that is so funny. That is, that made me crack up. I was on the floor. I was like,
that's funny.
Yeah. Because it wasn't Paris. Actually made that decision in your mind as an actor, like I've got to do some weird physicality where this doesn't look like Tom. And it was great because it was so simple. That choice was so simple to put your hand in a fist and stick it on the side of your hip like that. great.
It was funny. I also noticed in this scene that Bellana was moving around a lot. And this is when Roxanne was pregnant.
Yeah.
And so they had to do a pregnancy block.
Yeah, they stayed up. She went down, right? They didn't follow her because typically they would follow her down, right?
Yeah.
And then bring it. Yes, but they didn't. Yep.
Stayed off her belly. I found, Paris's apology, Faux Perry's apology to be so creepy.
It was.
And then she kissed him. She kissed Faux Perry. And God knows what else happened after the scene cut out. Exactly. But oh, poor B'Elanna. She was conned by this poor, creepy guy.
Are you basically
pretending to be faux Paris?
So how does that make you feel, real Tom? That
I know
faux Paris had Nookie. I mean, it's
implied
that he had Nookie with your lady. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the, and gross. And the payoff comes later in this episode. Yeah, it was bad. It was bad. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Okay, so the next scene is on Steth's shuttle, which is where he put the real Paris, who now looks like alien Steth. So let's call him Paris for now.
Yeah.
Paris starts to wake up.
Yeah.
And he tries to work the controls. And, he tries to speak. He's locked out of all controls, and then what are they called? The Benthians or
The Benthan ships arrive. But let's just say Dan Butler, great job. He's like, computer. Playing real Paris as
he did do a great body. Job.
He did a great job there. Yeah. Benthan ships arrive, right?
Mm-hmm. The Benthan ships arrive to arrest him.
I love those ships. Those were really awesome ships. I don't know who was doing the design of those ships for this episode, the visual effects, but they look great. Really good. Tractor beam.
They do get the shuttle, and then the real Steth beams over.
Yeah, the real Steth comes in and fires on the Benthan guard, right, with another cool looking ship, and then that Steth beams in and says, "I want my body back.
I want my body back." And then Paris, who looks like Dan Butler right now in makeup, Paris says, "We have a lot more in common than you think," and that's where we kind of go out there. So. We're starting to realize all of this body swapping and all the layers, how deep the game has gone.
Yeah, it's deep.
We go to the transporter room, and B'Elanna enters, and she says, "What's your surprise?" to faux Paris, and faux Paris says, "What would you say to 24 glorious hours on the famed fourth planet in the Kendron system?" And then her response is, "You mean the planet where Neelix is gathering food samples?"
All right.
And faux Paris goes,
Because he's thinking about having some Nookie outdoors. That's what's going on right now. Look at that.
I thought Roxanne did a great job with her deadpan delivery of, "You mean the planet where Neelix is gathering food samples?" Very deadpan, really funny. By the way, the picnic lunchbox that I'm bringing is huge. It is huge. What do you have in there, man? I know.
Is this an 8-course meal? What do you
supplies
have?
Supplies for a month? It was ginormous.
You must have had a change of clothes in there, swimsuit, everything ready to go.
Okay. And he's trying to talk her into this thing. And she's like, she's playing along for a minute. And then she's like, wait a minute. Are you serious?
Yeah.
She's like, we would be in so much trouble. And he's like, come on. And now he's getting, faux Paris is getting... Pissed off.
He gets violent here.
He gets violent. He grabs her hand. He grabs her by the face.
Yeah.
Wow. Boy. I just wrote, wow. That was
scary. I don't ever want to see that side of Robbie ever. I hope you never grab me by my face like scary. That. It was scary.
It was so scary.
Where did you find that guy? Oh my goodness.
I don't know. Well, that's faux Paris, okay?
All right, fine. All right. Leave it to faux Paris.
We go to the mess hall.
Mm-hmm.
And faux Paris is
are we in the mess hall?
Yeah.
Oh geez, I thought it was Paris's quarters is what I wrote.
I thought so too.
It's not Paris's quarters.
No, I think they put it in the corner of a mess hall. Maybe it is supposed to be his quarters, but we shot it in the corner of the mess hall
which is weird because this is the mess hall of the entire ship. That place, people are coming in and going all the time.
Yeah, so maybe they were trying to pretend that the corner of the mess hall, I don't think they had room for Paris's quarters. Remember they had to switch them out in and out?
Yeah.
So they probably had too many sets or something.
Okay.
So they just decided to stick him in the corner of the mess hall and pretend it's his quarters or I don't know. But yeah, he's drunk. Bottom line is he's drunk. Seven walks in.
She says, "Why did you skip the meeting?"
And then she also says, "Why are you reading the captain's personal logs?"
Oh, yeah.
Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
She sees it from over his shoulder that while he's sitting there drinking,
he's
reading the captain's logs that he had stolen from the other computer.
Have we established before this that Seven has a photographic memory? Have we Have you talked about? Okay. No. Because this is kind of, this comes up in this episode.
Yeah. She says, he lies and says, that's not the captain's log. She goes, yeah. She says, I have a photographic memory. Do you want me to repeat what I saw you reading?
Exactly.
And she starts to repeat a line of it there.
Yeah.
And he gets pissed off again, snaps and grabs Seven too.
Yeah.
Grabs her.
Yeah.
And threatens her.
Yeah, I was actually getting excited because I was hoping that, you know,
that there'd be a fight and he'd go down.
Because Seven always punches Harry. So I thought, oh, yes, Fauxperie is going to get punched out, not Harry. So I was really expecting that to happen, but it didn't.
I know it didn't happen. I know.
Tense, though. Very tense.
Very tense. And then we cut to the ready room. Janeway's sitting on her couch and the door opens and there's Fauxperie.
Yeah.
And Janeway is mad. And note that I made is, she's sitting on her couch for this disciplinary conversation, which is very strange because usually Cape Mulgrew is up and pacing and moving and taking charge. And this was a very unusual blocking. And I honestly don't know if I liked it. I think it would have been better if she had been up and moving. She finally stands up near the end, but
she does. But I almost feel like maybe Jesus was like, okay, in the next scene, when Janeway is being choked by Fauxperie, it needs to be in a place where we can shoot it. It's better if you guys are in the couch area. So I think maybe that's why she started on the couch, right?
Probably.
To make it easier for the camera. But who knows? But you're right. It was awkward. It's weird.
It was like, a little awkward. There? And it took some energy out of her performance, I thought. Mm-hmm. You know, instead of her being decisive and the captain and kind of bossing the situation and stuff, she seemed very passive and sort of lacked energy there on the couch.
Yes.
But she does, she wants Paris to report to sick bay for tests.
Mm-hmm.
And we see Paris sort of jump her. And then we cut out to Tuvok, where we hear Janeway call, security, I need security right away.
Yeah.
And we follow Tuvok around. And as the door opens, we see Paris is choking her.
Yeah.
And Tuvok and the security team run in and they stun him. They shoot him.
They stun Fauxperie.
Fauxperie. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now we go to the Steth ship, the alien and Paris, are working together to try to break through these lockout commands, get the warp drive online. They're finally able to get the ship up and running, and they're headed for Voyager. Then we go to sick bay, and the doctor says he's healed the phaser wounds, but he's unable to wake Fauxperie. And he said, the strangest thing is blood analysis reveals traces of a second DNA pattern. And that's very strange. They don't know what to make of that. So they're starting to puzzle together. And then Chakotay calls and he says, a shuttle has appeared on sensors. So we cut up to the bridge. cut up to the bridge and Steth and a female come on screen, or really Paris and the female alien come on screen. And he tells Janeway that he is actually Tom Paris and he's not Steth, that he's taken over his body. And Janeway says, you know, stay right where you are. I've got to go to sick bay. No time to explain, she says to Chakotay.
Right.
So very, very abrupt kind of turn. And
Chakotay out, sort of.
Out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then we jump the next scene. It's this interior of a shuttle where Seven is working on something on a console. And that's when we realize, uh-oh, there's a faux Janeway now.
He's taken over her body.
Mm-hmm.
Must have been in sick bay, I guess.
That's when it happened it happened in the struggle in the ready room. That's when he swapped bodies there. And we realized that, right?
Yeah.
So that's when Seven is now phasered by Janeway and then steals the shuttle and takes off in that shuttle. That's when we jump to the bridge and Paris is now talking. Well, Steth, this is so confusing. Steth and
real Paris, who looks
real
like
Paris,
Steph.
Who looks like Steth, is talking to Chakotay and finally convinces him that he is really Paris in Steth's body.
And he says, "Trust me." Chakotay's like, "How do I know it's you?" And he says, "The real Paris, who looks like Steth, says, you know, the other day I was in your quarters and you told me that I had turned my life around.
Right.
And please give me a chance to prove it."
Right.
And that's exactly what Chakotay had said. So
you know what? I think that was a waste of time. I think real Paris should have said, Akuchi Moya. And then at that moment, Chakotay would have went,
Akuchi Moya.
Akuchi Moya. And then let you go.
Yeah.
So you are now released from the tractor beam and you got you and other Steth in female body are now taking off to chase after Fo Janeway, right? The shuttle chase begins.
Very confusing.
Yes, it's so confusing. But the best part of this whole shuttle chase is the line from Fo Janeway when Fo Janeway says, "Send my best regards to B'Elanna."
And she has a creepy laugh. That. Yes.
which really meant that was the payoff laugh, which the subtext was, "I had nookie with your lady," is what that laugh was, right?
Agreed.
Creepy.
Creepy. So creepy, Kate.
Horrible.
What a creepy performance that is.
Good job by Kate Mulgrew.
Yeah. And then we go back to the real Paris, who looks like Steph. And he's trying to think of how to stop the shuttle.
Yeah.
And he remembers the coaxial drive carburetor combo idea. And
which is like, it's kind of like a War Particles moment where you're like, carburetor is what you kind of come up with. Right?
Yeah, I did.
And then you disabled the ship. But here's the thing. Fo Janeway did a great job. Kate did a great job as Fo Janeway until she puts her palm she puts her forehead in the palm of her hand, which was very much Kate Mulgrew as Janeway, I felt.
Yes.
And not Fo Janeway, right? So there's a little bit of, tweaking that could have gone on there, but okay.
But yes, Paris, the real Paris does disable the ship. So he's able to stop this alien that keeps jumping bodies. And then there's a captain's log where the captain says something like, "The doctor has figured out a way to return the victims to their original bodies."
Yeah.
And I just hit pause and I'm like, wait a minute, what?
Yeah. How did you figure that out, doctor?
We just kind of skipped over a really huge part of like,
right.
Sure, let's go.
Clearly, that is the writer knowing there is only 3 minutes left in this episode.
Yeah.
I must tie everything up very quickly, right?
Yeah.
Done.
So we go to sick bay and the doctor has returned everybody to their bodies. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I wrote again, we skipped over how the doctor has been able to recover everyone to their bodies. Paris, Steth, Janeway are all put back in the right bodies.
But I wanted to see Steth. I wanted to see the real Steth, but we didn't see that.
No.
We just see female Steth standing there. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
They say that they're going to try to find all the other victims the shapeshifter has violated when they bring him back to Benthos. So that's kind of how we wrap up the Steth story. And then our little coda at the end of the episode is in the garage.
Mm.
Paris is showing B'Elanna the holodeck that he's been hiding out in and working on the car. And she goes, "It's a garage." And he's like, it's so much more than a garage. It's a monument to the hundreds and hundreds of hours that I probably
should have spent with you.
I love that line.
How does she pronounce the car? What does she
say? Camaro.
Camaro.
Camaro. Camaro.
Camaro. Camaro. Oh, my goodness.
It was very funny. She looks on the side of the car to see what it's called. Yes. Nice Camaro.
Yeah. And then you guys have a nice makeout session.
And then we have a makeout. And I do remember filming this scene when she had to get in. There was concern because of her belly, her pregnant belly.
Oh, how she would sit
in the car. And because those old cars, if anyone's ever been in these old cars, they don't have seats that just slide up and down. Like the seats are fixed.
They're fixed seats. So you have to maneuver your body to get into those vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
And then she had to turn so that we could do the makey-outy part.
Yeah.
And she was very pregnant at this point. So,
see, that's when you should have looked down and said, "Whose baby is that?" And then it would have turned into a whole soap opera thing, right? Is that Steph's baby? Or the identity theft alien baby, or whatever you want to call that person, or my baby.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right.
What is your theme for this? Do you have a theme?
Yeah. For me, I just, my theme was everything in moderation, because you spent hundreds of hours in that garage, and that was you kind of putting all your time into that and and avoiding and ignoring your responsibilities as a boyfriend, as a crew member on this ship. So you were going overboard. You were kind of going, you know, putting all of your time in one thing and not balancing your life out. So everything in moderation was my theme for this, or my lesson for this episode. How about you?
Don't invite aliens with weird noses that you don't know on your ship. That's my theme. Why did they invite him on? Like, they haven't even kind of downloaded if he's a good guy or a bad guy. They're just like, come on over. Come on over. Come on our ship. Invite strangers in. You can be nice to them. You can help them. Just don't invite them in your house until you get to know them. That's true.
Is that your theme? Okay.
Yeah.
My sub theme is invest in firewalls for your laptop, your mobile device, so no one can steal your identity.
Steal your data.
Identity theft is real, people. Yes.
Exactly.
I like your theme, though. All right, everyone. So that is our recap of Vis-a-vis.
Vis-a-vis.
With Faux Paris. I hope you enjoyed it. Join us next week when Robbie and I will recap and discuss the episode The Omega Directive.
Ooh.
I like that name, The Omega Directive.
Scary.
All right.
Very ominous.
And for all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your wonderful bonus material.